Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Welcome and good morning to the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning, Harry. I'm Dave Kavickian, everybody.
Harry Miller, take two.
And once my mouth starts forming words, hopefully David sounds really good. I'll be able to talk to you also. You know, I've been taking too many weeks off this winter, and I guess given the forecast for today. It's a good thing I did. But anyway, I see that we have a really, really serious weather problem right now in the Albany area. Anyway, this is the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour. And we are here each Saturday morning to chat with you about estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid asset protection planning for home care, for long-term chronic care. We are available for the next hour to chat with you, say good morning to you, answer your questions, and hopefully give you some interesting information to think about. And you can reach David and I here at the studio by picking up your telephone and dialing us at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. So, morning, Dave. In the long, cold winter of Albany, 1 week before the first day of spring almost, huh?
You know, a couple years ago, Harry, I don't know if you remember this. Ben, I'm sure you do. There was a big, big storm St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yeah.
We're not far from that. I mean, this one, I think, the way it looked like, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, the further north and the further west, it looked like you're getting pounded extra, and maybe Albany doesn't get as much this time around.
We'll see. That's the way it looks right now. But, you know, these storms are so fickle. You know, a move of, you know, 25, 50 miles one way or the other could mean a whole bunch of snow or really not a lot. We're not starting out with a lot, but the roads are now wet. And, you know, once it gets cranked up and the temperature drops, then it will get, you know, way more serious.
Mm-hmm. Well, even down here, I mean, we have snow, but we have really bad rain about 6, 7 o'clock this morning, and it's moving through. But here, where we are in Chapel Hill area, we're just having rain. Over on the coast toward Wilmington and the Outer Banks, they're actually forecasting the possibility of tornadoes because of the high winds and things like that. So, but of course, we don't get snow down here.
Well, it's not often for people if they're sitting at home listening to the radio. So welcome everyone. Harry, you know, tomorrow is also daylight savings. Or not.
Oh my God! Thanks for reminding me. Let's see. Spring ahead, fall back. So we're going to lose an hour tonight, right?
We are going to lose an hour. We're gonna gain an hour of sunlight in the evenings, which is the sign that spring is coming. It's the best.
Before
we get into estate planning stuff, I did my research. I know you already probably know the whole history. Do you know how it all started?
Spring what, daylight forward, savings?
Daylight savings,
though? Yeah. I don't know, but why don't you tell me? I think I may have known at one time, but I forgot.
Well, so back when you were in grammar school, back in 1918, that's when...
during the first pandemic, right?
Yeah. Actually, so that's when the U.S. adopted it, and the whole idea of it was that, you know, if your calendar is not based on when the sun rises and it's based on hours of the day, then there's certain times of the year where you're, you know, waking up and going to work in the dark, or you're coming home and it's dark, and so on and so forth. So the idea was saving, you know, on candle wax and saving on energy bills.
David, when I was a little kid, we did actually have electricity.
In 1918, they didn't have big, you know, transformers and all sorts of...
I understand. There's a lot of gas lighting. A lot of gas lighting, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
And now it means that, you know, if you want to go do something active outside in the summer, you got an extra hour to do it. I like it. Fantastic.
Yeah, another thing I can't figure out, because although the United States recognizes daylight savings time, there's places like Arizona doesn't. Do you ever notice that? Arizona doesn't recognize daylight savings time, or maybe they're always on daylight savings, because sometimes there's a 1 hour, and then sometimes there's a 2 hour time difference, and sometimes there's only a one. So I guess each state has the option to opt out of it if they choose to, because the only state I'm aware of is Arizona. I never could figure that out, but you know, there you go.
Yeah, I think it's too complicated to even think about. I'd rather talk about state planning and elder law, to be honest with you.
I agree.
Well, so, you know, we do have webinars coming up. We'll share the schedule later on in the hour. And we were emailing, and I told you I have a couple fact patterns for you. One of them, which is not the one that we were just talking about before we went on, it's more mm-hmm. of a traditional estate planning type of fact pattern, but man, oh man, it really helps when you use an attorney that does this kind of stuff. And so let me give you this fact pattern, Harry, and you could kind of issue spot it for everybody out there, okay? So a gentleman passed away. He had a house in New York. He had a house in Florida. He's divorced. He has four kids. He went online and he produced a will for himself. And
one of those internet things?
Yeah, and then unfortunately he passed.
Right.
So I spoke with one of the kids who's the executor named in the will. Not executor yet, because the will obviously has to go through probate.
Has to be probated, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so she was giving me the lay of the land and, you know, what did Dad own just in his name and et cetera. So, like, okay, well, we got a, you know, Florida ancillary probate after we do the New York probate. He was a resident of New York. Mm-hmm. You know, domiciled here. So it'll be a New York probate at first. And I said, well, I assume that the four kids are getting everything equally. And that's where she said, well, no, we're not equal. I said, all right, well, just so you know, part of the process is you got to get waivers and consents from the people who are interested parties in this probate and so on and so forth. And she says, well, that might be a problem. I said, well, what's going on? And the uneven distribution is that one of the siblings isn't getting anything, and that sibling is not getting anything because that sibling has a drug problem, and yes. unfortunately, mm-hmm. a rather serious one. I said, well, look, you know, I know how the story will end. The story will end with everything going based on the terms of the will, but the way we get there might be extremely costly and time-consuming because of this sibling of yours that, for example, Harry, they can't really locate her all the time. And so okay. there's a couple different things going on. Why don't we just start with the idea that a will goes through probate? And particularly when we're talking about wanting to avoid probate, the idea of probate in two different states, because there's property in two different states. I know you've had a lot of experience with it. So what are your thoughts on all that, or at least that part of it?
Well, I think on that part, I mean, preliminarily, you know, unfortunately, the father here has left a complete mess for his family to clean up after he's gone, because he didn't get any advice, apparently. If he just went online, downloaded an internet type of will, and you'd be surprised how many folks wind up doing this. But, you know, particularly when a person owns real property in more than one state, every state you own real property in, the will, if you're leaving your property passing through will, then every state has to go through a probate proceeding in order to transfer the real property either to people who are in the will or to sell it. And so we're going to do this in New York. And the preliminary problem is, as you said, in order to probate the will in New York, and the same is true in Florida, you have to notify everybody who would have inherited this guy's property that he died without a will. He died without a will. Everything would have been divided in four equal shares. Now, we have one child who, for perhaps very good reasons, isn't receiving anything. There are other ways to give this drug-addicted child property without putting it into her pocket, and we can talk about that later on. But, you know, so we get the will probated. That could take And then ordinarily, what do we take in the Capital District? 30 to 60 days is a normal time to get a will probated, get everything signed.
Yeah, Harry, you're kind of hitting on it, because even when it's easy, even when everyone's doing fine, even when the distributions are equal, we still need to kind of run around and get documents prepared and sign these waivers and consents and so on. And then we submit things to the court. Oh, by the way, based on values of assets, just because of the New York probate, the filing fee with the surrogates court will be $1,250. That's off the top. Before anything.
That's what I know. And let me just throw something in here, David, because this just happened yesterday. I have a client whose mother is, his father died without a will. He has a house in New York City, in Brooklyn. He has a house in New York City that's probably worth, $700,000, $800,000. He owns half the house, is in the father's estate. One of the sons owns the other half of the house. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, they're probating the will in Kings County in Brooklyn, all right? Now, the guy calls me, the son, who's a lawyer in Washington, calls me and say, hey, we want to list the house. It's March, okay? We want to get the house sold in the spring. He said, can we? I said, well, you know what happened? They filed a probate petition in Brooklyn in September, all right?
Oh, my
September,
goodness.
Last September. It is now March, whatever, 14th, and the will hasn't been probated yet in Brooklyn. So I said, well, here's the problem. There's no legally appointed representative who could sign a contract or even a listing agreement with a broker. You know, your brother can. He owns the other half of the house. But you're stuck until the court. He said, well, the lawyer keeps calling the court. In New York City, it's 10 times worse than it is upstate where we are. Time, delay, money. And here you have the risk of losing a good opportunity to sell a house. And in the meantime, somebody's got to be paying the taxes and utilities. All this stuff could be avoided by putting the darn piece of real estate into some kind of a trust.
Absolutely. And my fact pattern echoes yours a little bit, because one of the questions that she had was, okay, well, bills are accumulating here. First of all, it took a while for them to even find the will.
Who's paying the heating bills? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she said, well, my dad's accounts are all locked up because he had one or two small bank accounts just in his name. So again, there was, you have a will because you're preparing for the possibility you may die. And then people just stop there, Harry, and they don't continue with the fact pattern, which is, well, if I passed, wouldn't it be nice for there to be money available immediately to take care of things? Wouldn't it be nice to not have to go through probate? Let's not ask my child, who is a drug addict, who is gone months at a time, let's not ask that person to, sign a document allowing us to probate the will, because we actually need her signature. And that gets me kind of to the next thing, which is, this isn't cookie cutter. I said, when it's easy, it takes a while. When it's easy, there's a filing fees. When it's not easy, when we cannot find this person, or the person is unwilling to sign a waiver, we then need and what the court does is it says, okay, we need to give everyone who has standing this opportunity in court. Mm-hmm. So instead of them voluntarily signing a waiver, we have to now have the court issue something called a citation, and we need to serve the parties with the citation. So now, think back to, people out there, what you would, you would see in TV or in a movie, right? Some person walks up to you and serves you with divorce documents, right? They're serving you with something. We need to hire someone to personally serve this person with a citation saying, hey, show up in court by this date, on this date, at this time, to say why you disagree with this will, or you're going to intend to file objections, or we'll put the will in. So we need to serve her. How do we serve her personally if we don't know where she is?
We've got to find her first, right.
We've got to find her first, right. Well, the court thought of this, so we can actually ask the court for an order to allow us to mail it. If that didn't work, we could ask the court for a order for us to post something in a local newspaper in the legal notice section. This all takes time, weeks.
That costs money, too.
Court appearances.
Guess what, David? What if this drug-addled daughter is so incapacitated that the court decides that they want to appoint a guardian ad litem because she may not be able to act in her own best interest.
Why not? Right? I mean, I think it would
more
be
delay,
appropriate.
More, you know, a guardian ad litem is basically some other lawyer in the area who acts for a person who is incapacitated, whether mentally, you know, whatever, if they can't function for themselves, if they're in some type of an addiction, you know, program. And say, wait, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what all this stuff means. Now you have somebody else involved. This lawyer is going to get paid a fee out of your father's estate. And again, more delay, more time delay, because they have to file a report, they have to do interviews. You know, the thing, you could go on and on. It's a nightmare.
So every fact pattern isn't like this. Every family isn't like this, right, Harry? And by the way, the fact that it is an online will, the fact that an attorney wasn't involved, means that certain presumptions about the validity of the will do not, you know, start for us. You know, we lose some of the presumptions that everything was done the right way, that the person who signed the will had their mental capacity. He had some neighbors sign as witnesses that attested mm-hmm. to the fact that he signed the will. In our office, Harry, you know that witnesses don't just sign an attestation, they sign an affidavit saying that everything right. happened the right way. There was no affidavit, so we will prepare affidavits for these witnesses. The fact that they're...
Assuming they're still around and we can find them. Assuming they're still around, we can find them. And, you know, they haven't retired, moved to Arizona, depending on how long ago the will was executed.
So, you know, the little facts here are they are around. And the will was done fairly recently. You know, I think we will be able to track down the daughter with the issues.
Mm-hmm.
However, the service part's going to be difficult. The cost is going to be difficult. And, Harry, we can't do anything in Florida until we have the authority in New York to do things. So Florida, this ancillary probate, they're going to want proof that you are authorized to act on behalf of the estate in the state that the person was domiciled in. So nothing's going to happen in Florida. And, oh, by the way, right, Florida attorney. Florida filing fees, right? All that is now mm-hmm. part of the mix. And
very expensive,
I mean,
also.
$5,000 to $10,000 estate administration, and they're not all this expensive. They're not, but this is going to be a tremendous amount of work. And you know, we'll talk about the webinars in a little bit. But when we do the wills versus trusts webinar, Harry, or mm-hmm. seminar, one of the slides is towards the end is when we really recommend you consider a trust. And this checks off a bunch of boxes, right? Unequal distributions between kids because there might be a fight. Issues with the kids, substance abuse, gambling, things like that, right? We want to make sure that they really can't contest. Property in multiple states. So I almost could yell out bingo from all the things that this checks off, unfortunately. But this is what they're going to have to deal with. And a trust could have saved it. Just a good plan. So bank accounts linked to one of the kids who now has some liquidity to deal with the fact, all right, I didn't want to pay for a trust. Okay, well, you're going to pay for the probate.
Yeah, right? You're not more than the trust would have cost by my mobile.
Right. Yeah. So these things happen. You, I know you have so many versions of the story. by the way,
the worst case situation I ever had was about 10, 12, 15 years ago. A client whose husband died and had a substantial estate and substantial real property holdings in six states, all right, like Vermont, New York, Mississippi, I forget where else. There were six states, plus he owned several thousand acres of land in the Maritime Provinces in Canada. He had to literally retain counsel in all those states and also Canadian counsel in Quebec to do ancillary probate in all those states, in addition to New York. I don't even remember, but the fees were staggering to do all that just to transfer the property. Otherwise, the estate was large, but it was not particularly complicated. Everything went to the surviving spouse, okay? And then it went to the children. The surviving spouse survived the decedent. But the administration part of it, which could have been so simple with a trust, and you could put all six of those properties plus a Canadian into the same trust. You don't need seven different trusts to do that. You can park them all, unless there are other reasons. You can put them all in a single trust entity and avoid all those time delays. And I think it took probably upwards of 2 years. It took upwards of 2 years to get all those ancillary probate proceedings in a position where the property could actually be deeded to someone.
Well, you know, Harry, I think a lot of that stuff happens because people out there, the person who is not an attorney or an estate planning attorney, if you walked up to them and said, you know, what's the most important estate planning document you could have, they'd say a will, right? Everyone is trained to say the will.
It would be everybody's first answer.
Everyone's got to have a will, right? That's a good starting point, though, because, and this is part of the education. I'll share the webinar schedule in a second here. A will is meaningless, Harry. It's got no value until you are dead and it goes through probate. End of story.
And a will is not an estate plan. A will is not an estate plan. They're two different things. A will is part of an estate plan, but it's not the sum and substance of it. And that's, as you say, that's the educational portion that we're trying to get across to folks. I have a will. Okay, great. Great, that's a good start. What else do you have? Oh, I don't know. No. So there you go. So Monday, March 14th is the Wills. This is this coming Monday at 2 p.m., Wills versus Trust. So tune in to the webinar.
Yeah, so it is our webinar week, Harry, 2 p.m. every single day next week. We have a webinar. If that time doesn't work, that day doesn't work, don't worry, because they're all on demand on our website, herzoglaw.com. You mentioned Monday, March 14th. You know, because February was 28 days, Monday, March 14th is exactly 1 month after Valentine's Day when we did also have a webinar, which we've talked about before. March 14th at 2 p.m. this Monday, Wills versus Trust, as Harry mentioned. The next day, the 15th, what to do when a loved one dies. This is what we're talking about. We spent the first 25 minutes here talking about what's going to happen when this particular loved one died. Not every fact pattern is like this, so you really need to know your stuff. It's also a great tool to kind of figure out how to plan so we could avoid some of the pitfalls that happen when you're doing estate administration. Wednesday, the 16th of March, 2 p.m., the top 10 reasons to plan your estate. And if you register now, Harry, we will throw in one more reason to plan your estate.
11? A baker's almost a dozen? Sorry.
Thursday, Patty's Day, March 17th, 2 p.m., aging in place. That's what everyone wants to do. The second half hour fact pattern has to do with the pitfalls with that, unfortunately, Harry. And then Friday, the 18th, 2 p.m., estate planning in prime time. A little bit of fun with some TV families and how we could apply some of the lessons from their shows to your life, et cetera. You could register by going to herzoglaw.com and clicking on the seminar page. And you could also be our first caller, Harry, by calling 518-476-5900.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yes. Yes. They are...
I should update the primetime slides. The current families are, let's see, we have All in the Family. We have Growing Pains.
Are you the Bunkers?
The Bunkers. We have the Seavers from Growing Pains. We have the Huxtables from The Cosby Show. We have the Tanners from Full House. And who's the other one? We have Family Ties, the Keatons from Family Ties.
Oh, I was shaking. That's fascinating. I don't know if I've seen that. I may tune into that one myself because I'm not sure. That's cool. Who's doing that? Are you doing that one? No.
That's my creation. I haven't done it in a long. We haven't done it very long, actually. It's very helpful to just not have to think about your own parents. Or to think about your own spouse when you're doing some of these or learning some of these concepts. I feel like sometimes when we're, especially when we did the in-person seminars, Harry, you're talking to someone, but you could see their mind working, and their mind is somewhere else thinking about whatever's going on in their family after you just said something about long-term care or something like that. So it triggers
ideas in there. Let me guess. I'm guessing Archie Bunker didn't want Meathead to be the executor of his estate, but.
You're killing the lead here, Harry. No, that's exactly right. So, you know, if you die without a will in New York, if Archie Bunker died without a will in New York, his wife would get $50,000 plus one half of the assets, and the other half would go to Gloria, the daughter, right?
Right.
So if Gloria, post-deceased, right, she passes away after Archie, her father. Well, her money would go to her spouse. Her spouse is
Meathead.
Yeah. That actually, that's just one of the lessons on that fact pattern. Because the other one is, you know, Edith and Archie, they're in their early 50s in that show. If he passed away, you know, and you're in your 50s right now, and heck, if you're in your 60s, you have decades, three, four decades of life left. I don't want your spouse to have half the money. I don't want Gloria to get the other half. I want my wife, Edith, to have all the money. Times are different.
That's right.
You know? I could probably do the whole webinar right now, Harry, if you'd like.
No, save it. Save it for Friday. No, it'll be, yeah, definitely. No, they're interesting. The way you see, family shows and legal issues come up, and they never. Sometimes when we do when lawyers do continuing legal education, we look at legal stuff on TV and in movies and stuff, and look at it in terms of ethical violations and things like that, because there's numerous ones. But there's so many lessons to be learned from just watching family, particularly situation comedy shows and things that come up, which although it's a comedy show, could not be very funny down the road. In real life.
Harry, I know we got the break coming up here, but Harry, I just want to mention, one of my clients yesterday asked if I what happens with the reading of the will after I die? And I said to her, I've never once read a will in front of
family. After the break, I can tell you about that because that's a...
Okay, all right.
Cool.
Well, we can take that break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up. Right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
A good one. Okay. Welcome back to everyone. And this is the second half hour of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
Morning, everyone. I'm Dave Kubikin.
And David and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. And if you're regularly listening to the show, we are some combination of the estate planning group is here to talk to you each Saturday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock. We would love to have some of your phone calls and questions during the next half hour. And you can be our next caller by dialing us here in the studio at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Welcome back.
Hey, I gotta hear this.
Go ahead.
Yeah. You said you have a story about reading the will. I mentioned I've never ever read the will in front of the kids or anything like that. So tell me.
At that time, well, it's you know, but people had this concept from probably from watching too much television and right. mostly Perry Mason. Remember Perry Mason back in the 1950s? And they would come in and read the will. And, of course, someone had, you know, sometimes the decedent had been murdered as opposed to just died of natural causes, which, of course, complicates the will. But actually, the concept of reading of the will, it goes back to the Middle Ages in Europe in the 12th, 13th, 14th century, where it was customary and wills were read routinely. The reading of the will developed because in medieval Europe, before the Renaissance, virtually all the population was illiterate. No one could read or write. And the only people who could read and write were clergymen and lawyers. And so people did wills, and lawyers prepared them, or like in Italy, things people called notaries. Notaries are like, in Italy, were the equivalent of a paralegal, for instance, like a junior lawyer type of person under the supervision of other people. And they would prepare these documents. People would sign them, but they couldn't read them. They had no idea what was in them. And so and that was the origin of the concept of reading the will, because otherwise nobody knew who was getting anything. Yeah.
Harry, I just have to ask for Ben and I, will there be a test later on all this, or do we have to take notes?
Yes, you'll have to describe in a short paragraph or two the difference between a lawyer and a notary in 15th century Florence. Yes.
Harry, David, we do have a caller. We have Chris from Scotia.
Hi.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Hi, I just had a question, and I received Social Security disability, and along with that, I received Medicaid. Yes. A friend of mine wants to leave me her life insurance policy, and I want to know if I can take this policy and not lose my Medicaid benefits.
Well, if you're on Social Security disability, inheriting property from someone would not affect your Social Security. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Harry.
However, if you are on Medicaid and your asset level exceeds, I think, what is it, around $16,800 this year?
$16,800, that's right.
$16,800 this year. So and the insurance probably is more than that, then you would effectively, you would have to come off of Medicaid until your asset level had gone down. So you could... There are a number of things that your friend could do in terms of, I mean, you could turn around and take that money and put it in a first-party supplemental needs trust and use it for your benefit. It would be better if the friend, your friend with the insurance is still alive, I take it, right?
She dropped off the, The feedback was awful.
If the person who has the insurance policy is still alive, I would think the preferable thing would be to have the insurance policy go into a third-party special needs trust so that it would provide available funds, but it wouldn't affect your Medicaid benefits through the Social Services Department. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple things that friend can do, and the key is that friend, because if you're the beneficiary of something and you receive money, well, now it's your money, and you're going to have to deal with the consequences of having money. But sometimes, believe it or not, out there, it's not the best to have money in your own name because you may lose some benefits that you're already getting, which might be the case here. So if the friend did exactly what you're saying, and it could be done by creating her own trust, the friend creates a trust, maybe she throws her own home in there to avoid probate like we were talking about in that first half hour. And then because we now have a thing, an entity that exists, we could name that life insurance, we could name that trust as a beneficiary of the life insurance. We could even pick it up and place the life insurance into that trust. And then very simply, Harry, like you said, the trust could say, you know, upon the termination of this thing, when friend dies, everything goes as follows. And it could say this amount of money or this policy goes to this woman who called us, you know, on the radio, in trust as follows, with sprinkling all the rules to make sure that benefits aren't lost. You would name someone to be in charge of that money. We can't have this caller be her own trustee for it. There's rules there, but we could have our cake and eat it too, for sure. It only happens with you know, some more complicated planning than the average will or trust for sure, but very easy to do.
Yeah, this is why these sorts of things, when we get involved with programs like this, it becomes really important to have legal advice from folks who not only are capable of preparing estate planning documents like wills and trusts and powers of attorney, but who also understand the differences between various federal programs for people, whether they're disabled people, whether they're older people or whatever. I mean, for instance, the caller was on Social Security disability. Now, if a person is disabled and on Social Security disability, and the disability has been in effect for more than 2 years, they also are eligible to apply for Medicare, all right? Now, Medicare and Social Security disability are not what are called means-tested programs. So those programs do not look at your income and asset level in order to continue to receive them. Now, I believe, in addition, she said she was on Medicaid. Medicaid would pick up, for instance, for a retired person on Medicare, you would buy a supplemental policy to cover the charges that Medicare doesn't pay for, and also potentially prescription drugs. If you're under 65 but you are disabled, you may be on Medicare, but you still have no coverage, and if you can't afford the insurance privately, you could apply for Medicaid, which is what this woman said she had. So she wouldn't lose her Medicare, but she could lose her Medicaid if she inherits a $25,000 or a $50,000 life insurance policy from her friend when she passes on. So when you're doing estate planning, your lawyer better understand the differences between these different programs. Otherwise, you may not get the most ideal estate plan that protects assets yet makes them available for your benefit, and you don't inadvertently lose your eligibility for these programs, which can provide tremendous medical and pharmaceutical benefits. Everybody, you know, when you go to the drugstore, how much these pills cost, you know, they're not cheap. So most folks need some kind of supplement to help afford those kinds of benefits.
Harry, I wasn't on the radio last week, probably better that I wasn't, because there was a rather significant event in our family that I talked to you about, and just want to bring it up more as a lesson for everyone out there, because it's one thing to for us to plan for people and to create elder law plans, even to get people qualified for Medicaid or community Medicaid, the home care piece of Medicaid. Entirely different, though, when it's one of your loved ones that is getting the care. And I know you've had fact patterns where we're worried about, I believe, your mother-in-law and what kind of care is she going to get. And sure. You know, the reality of long-term care is a lot different than an attorney planning for it. And
that's for sure.
My family, there's been a long-term care event that's been accruing for about 8 years or so. And it started with us realizing that there was, maybe some cognitive things going on with a relative, but, they weren't sharing and their spouse wasn't sharing any of it. And it was all very private, very proud. We don't want to, let everyone know what's going on type of situation. Mm-hmm. And
it's typical.
Eventually it became a little more evident, and finally the cat was out of the bag. And when that happened, I kind of stepped in to say, hey, listen, this is literally what I do for a living. Let me do my thing here. This is what we need to do. And so we created a trust, dealt with the house. We want to protect things. The goal is always to stay at home, right? We don't want to be in a nursing home, but we need to start clocks in case it happens anyway, right? I don't care what you want, Harry. If you need a nursing home, and that word need actually applies, well, then I guess you don't have a choice, right? And that's what we were kind of worried about. At least I was worried about. And unfortunately, we're at the precipice of this big event. And the reason why is because the person who had been the caregiver for this relative, their spouse, who had been doing everything, the dirty work, and I mean the dirty work, Harry, 24/7.
Yeah, it's the doing. It's the doing of it. And this is very common. What your relative was doing is a very common thing. Caring for somebody without, with really no outside help, No paid outside help and very little, you know, inner help because people aren't available. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so you see where I'm going here. The caregiver is the one who passed away. And right. The expectation, to the extent anyone could expect anything ever, was that that would not be the order that things happened in, right? We expected a different order. And I was planning against any order, right? But the we don't want to rely on getting lucky, right? We want to plan proactively so that way luck is out of the equation. And you plan when times are good because one day times will be bad. That will happen for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the whole idea of it. And unfortunately, we didn't get through 5 years. And because of that, we now have someone who may need a nursing home, probably does, we'll see, who doesn't have a protected house because not enough time had passed and mm-hmm. bad things happened in the wrong order. So that's part one of the equation. And so we have a bunch of time here. Why don't I get your thoughts on just the idea of the pre-planning part, right? Planning for the future, and particularly, right, Harry, if there's a bad diagnosis in your family and you don't do right. anything about it, that's on you guys, right? You especially, right? I don't want to talk about a nursing home. I'm 65 years old. I got it, right? 72, I'm feeling good. Why do I need, I don't want to do a trust. I'll stick with a will.
I understand.
That's your mm-hmm. choice. That's your choice. Okay. If you get diagnosed with something that's a long-term care issue, I don't understand it anymore. At that point, you know, we pass a line, I think.
Harry, David, we have another caller. We have Ray cool. in Ballston Spa.
Morning, Ray.
Hey, Ray.
Good morning. I have a question regarding guardianship for a minor because of a possible inheritance. My daughter, one of my daughters died a year ago and left a four-year-old son. He is, my grandson is living with his father. Mm-hmm. And recently I lost a brother-in-law in Massachusetts. And due to the lineage, my daughter would have been an inheritance mm-hmm. some of his estate. Now it passes to my grandson.
Okay.
There has been, while my other brother-in-law, who is handling most of the estate, has retained lawyers out of Boston since he died in Massachusetts. And initially, one of the lawyers asked if I was the guardian, and I said no. His father, I believe, would be. However, in checking, he never really established guardianship through surrogate court. I didn't know if it was necessary. But they said because of inheritance, it would be necessary to protect the minor's property and any finances. Since then, a lawyer has come to us and said that it's not really necessary to proceed with the guardianship because there is a waiver that they can do to get this thing through probate. And most recently, one of the lawyers has told us that there's an option under Massachusetts and New York law, which would be to establish a Uniform Transfer to Minors Act account with the custodian appointed to administer the account for the benefit of my grandson without requiring the appointment of a guardian or conservator for my grandson. My question is this still really necessary to go forward with the guardianship through surrogate court here?
Well, so let me jump in for a moment. So obviously the answer depends, and we're talking about a Massachusetts probate, even though your grandson lives in New York, correct?
Right.
Okay. So first of all, and the learning moment for everyone out there, right, there's different kinds of guardians. So, for example, your grandson's father is his likely his legal guardian, right? He's living with his dad. That's the legal guardian of the kid.
An natural
right.
guardian. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. He has,
there's also
he has
a guardian of property.
Natural cause. He has well, possession of my grandson. But when it comes to finances, they're saying that guardianship,
or
he has to be named a guardian to protect his interests.
Correct. There's a difference between guardian of the person and guardian of that person's
property. Right.
Correct. And there is a proceeding in New York, a guardianship proceeding. It's a little truncated, a little easier than the normal guardianship we talk about for incapacitated people. And it happens through the surrogates court in New York, and it's based on the amount of money that someone's inheriting. If it's above a certain amount, we're going to need to do a guardianship for basically do the same thing that you're outlining, right? Someone is holding on to the money for this person at age 18. Your grandson would be entitled to that money, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. In Massachusetts, I don't know what they're going to request. I don't know what their thresholds are, so I will rely on what they are all saying. My experience would be, though, that we're likely going to need for his father, so your grandson's father, to be named the guardian in Massachusetts. I'm just speculating because I know that in New York, that's what we would need to do. When we talk about the probate, when we talk about estate administration and documents that need to be signed, right, your grandson can't sign those documents, right?
Correct.
When it's receiving money, when it's approving an accounting, when it's saying, yep, we're all done with this estate, he cannot sign those things. And depending on what we're talking about, it's a guardian of property or a guardian of the person who can. So, you know, unfortunately, and I'm sorry to hear about the passing of your daughter, these things happen and other people don't change their estate plans. It was very nice of that relative of yours to leave things to your daughter. But because of the way things were worded, it did eventually mean it would go to your grandson, which may have been part of the plan, but it's now very complicated.
Right.
Yeah, the will, in other words, the will, what could have happened here is either the daughter's will or your, is this just your brother-in-law or someone who died in Massachusetts?
He had no will.
He had no will, so he died intestate. Had he had a will, for instance, the wills we do provide that if any property is passing to a minor, like your grandson, the will would set up a trust, and someone that he named would be a trustee of that money. Now, because there's not a trust inside the estate plan, because there is no estate plan, he died intestate, a court-appointed guardian would be appropriate. I don't know about Massachusetts, but usually you were talking about uniform transfer to minors. That's something that's set up by a person. A human being opens an account at a brokerage firm or a bank. The estate of the person in Massachusetts, I don't believe, is going to be able to open up a uniform transfer to minors account and put that money in there directly out of the estate. So I'm guessing some sort of guardian, either in Massachusetts or here, would be appropriate. The Article 17A, you know, we're talking about Article 17A guardian under the Surrogates Court Procedure Act, is not that big a deal to do. And frankly, from your grandson's standpoint, I think it might be a good idea to have a court-appointed guardian to manage the money from your daughter's estate and also the Massachusetts estate, just from a standpoint of accountability, even though the natural guardian is the child's father. That way we know what's being done with the money, how it's being invested, that it's being properly applied for his benefit, for his education, for his health care needs that aren't covered by insurance. So, I mean, I think you seem to be trying to come up with ways to avoid the guardianship when I think it might, in fact, be a good idea that could be done relatively easily and without a huge amount of expense.
Okay. Now, my other question is, surrogate court on their application or on their form requests how much money he would be inheriting. At this time, don't know. It's still going through probate. Should I wait until an amount is set?
You're doing this yourself without a lawyer, this guardianship?
Yeah.
You're not receiving, you haven't retained anybody to do it?
Actually, no. I have we have a lawyer who has the forms all set, but I noticed on the form they were requesting how much money he would be inheriting.
Is this a New York form or a Massachusetts form?
New York form. New York.
Okay.
And the surrogate court pays their fees on the amount of the inheritance.
Sir, you have an attorney. I would rely on what the attorney tells you to do. You know, the 2 cents we're giving you is not going to be as valuable as the attorney you retained who has prepared the document. So if he tells you that this is appropriate to sign, or that there's a range that he's going to put in for the value, or it's undetermined, so be it, if that's his advice to you. But I would rely on your attorney instead of Harry and I right now.
Oh, absolutely. We're not giving you advice. But for instance, let me just explain something that's similar. When we're filing a probate petition in court, and we don't know, well, the person just died 2 weeks ago, and we don't know the total amount of the estate, we're going to have to estimate it, okay? So it's $300,000. And we pay the filing fee based upon that amount. Now, if it later turns out down the road that the estate is actually $600,000 and the fee would be higher, I mean, you can pay the additional fee down the road in a probate proceeding. I suspect the same is true in a, you know, I don't know. But again, you should call the lawyer who's handling this, and they should know how to proceed. And if they don't, they ought to call up the surrogate's court clerk and find out what to put into that space for an amount. You know, the court's clerk's office are usually very helpful to lawyers. You know, if you don't know the answer to a question, and believe me, from county to county, there are differences in what various surrogate's courts are looking for, even though the rules are the same. So, you know, if we or one of our paralegal assistants isn't sure how a particular county handles something, we usually call the court clerk's office, and they're very helpful in guiding us. And I'm sure that your lawyer can do the same thing.
Very good. Okay.
Thanks so much for your phone call.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good one.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's that's a problem, and it points up again, as you're saying, planning. You know.
Sure.
Hope for the best,
sure.
Plan for the worst. There's another situation where a person passes away, doesn't have any estate plan. Apparently the Massachusetts person died intestate. We don't know whether the daughter had a will or not. It sounds like if she had a 4-year-old child, she was pretty young when she passed away. Everyone who has children, even if you don't have you need to have an estate plan to plan for your minor children. Name the guardian, okay? We know what the relationship is between the father and the mother. If they were, you know, I mean, we don't know, and it doesn't matter. But very often in situations, the relationship is not good, or there are issues. I don't think there were in this case, but in many cases there are issues with a surviving parent being not only the personal guardian of the child, but certainly the financial guardian of the child. And all these things are really, as you can see, can become very complicated very quickly if you don't have the right plan and you haven't gotten the proper advice to govern the disposition of your assets. You know, it doesn't matter if you have $100,000 or $1 million. It's money that we want properly channeled for the benefit of these children, so that they can receive all the necessary benefits from the assets.
For sure, Harry. And in this example, there literally was no plan. There was no will, and so you're stuck with whatever the intestacy laws are in your state. So in New York, we know it's going to go a certain way. And guess what, everybody? Sometimes a 4-year-old inherits money, and that's not okay. That's not a good idea. Sometimes mom in a nursing home inherits money. We've unfortunately seen it a whole bunch of times where a child predeceases a parent, and because things aren't updated or plans don't exist at all, we're stuck with the rules, and the rules don't take into account the ages of people or the circumstances of people. The Surrogates Court Procedure Act, the Estate Powers and Trust Law, they don't take into account that our earlier fact patterns, child has a drug problem. so be it. They survived their dad. They're entitled to all this documentation. They have to sign a release or a waiver. If they don't, they have their day in court. You have to track them down. The laws are just words on pieces of paper, Harry. They don't take into account any of the other things. Literally, I mean, you know, Captain Obvious here. But
no, they're words on pieces of paper, but they can raise their ugly heads and bite you if you're not properly prepared, and that's the thing. And I don't know what it's hard to understand what the hesitancy is. I don't know that it's all financial. It's a lot of different things, but particularly when minor children are involved, I think we really have an obligation to go ahead and take care of things that can be so simple. Putting a simple trust inside your will or your trust for minor children, children who have disabilities, those sorts of things. Naming a guardian if you die, who's going to raise your children? Your spouse's family or your family? Invariably, you could get into a family feud about who's the best people to raise. If the child suddenly has no living parents, who's gonna take over? And that's something
Harry,
the married couple should make, some court. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, Harry. People have life insurance, and they say, well, if I die, there's enough money for my kids, and they have beneficiaries on retirement. So they go that first initial step of acknowledging that they may die, acknowledging that it's possible kids inherit money, and then they don't complete the process and do a trust or to do a will that links things, that has language that holds money in trust for grandchildren. So that way we don't run into these issues. It's all about planning.
It is indeed.
Good weekend, Harry.
Stay dry, stay out of the snow, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.